Right, so I'll continue on. And so in this talk, I'll talk about some of the work that we've been doing using numerical simulations of galaxy clusters. And I guess the audience doesn't need any introduction. I think clusters are excellent laboratories for doing cosmology as well as astrophysics. On cosmology side, there are big mysteries that still need to be tackled. We need to understand the nature of dark energy, dark matter. We think that they something like the clusters are excellent probes of learning some of these components. At the same time, at the core of the galaxy cluster is a region where the most massive galaxies and black holes would form. And studying the cores of galaxy cluster will tell us something about the astrophysics and property and evolution of these objects. So there are many exciting things you could do in cosmology as well as in astrophysics using by looking at these objects. And in this talk, I guess we're here to talk about the future of cosmology using clusters. And one of the major challenges for cosmology, cluster cosmology, is to try to calibrate the relationship between the observable and mass. This is one of the major challenges that's upon us. Majority of the baryons in clusters are in the form of hot extra-emitting gas, and cooling and heating and thermodynamic physical processes of galaxy clusters are one of the major challenges in this business. Based on the Vero theorem, we expect the relationship between the observable and the mass, such as this. Throughout this talk, I define the cluster radius to be something, the spherical region within which the mean density is delta times the critical density universe. And one of the major questions that we like to address is using simulation, what are the physical processes of galaxy formation, and what kind of effect they have on cluster properties, how well can, how does actually affect the observable mass relations, and how well the cluster simulations are doing compared to observations. I will also try to address how well cluster observable correlate with the cluster mass. And so I will try to address these issues in this talk based on simulations. The simulation that I will talk about today is the work we've been doing over the last several years that's based on n-body gas dynamic simulation based on adaptive refinement tree code. The code starts from the cosmological initial conditions, follow the dynamics of dark matter and stars. It also includes the gas dynamics. The gas dynamics is followed using the Eulerian adaptive mesh refinement technique, which achieved high resolution, high density regions that by adaptive refining meshes, the typical peak resolution simulations of order a few kiloparsec and the box size of 100 megaparsec, achieving dynamic range of about 16,000, 32,000 in 3D. Starting from cosmological initial condition. The code also includes the variety of physical processes relevant for galaxy formation physics, including star formation, feedback, energy feedback from supernova, also metal enrichment. Star formation, of course, is not fully resolved, so we actually use observed recipe that actually predicts what rate that star should be forming based on the local gas density, and we use the observational prescription based on the Kennicott law. That's basically the star formation rate averaged over the galaxies. That's actually applicable for the kind of simulation we're doing because we don't really resolve the star forming regions. Typical size of the stellar particles are of order 10 to the 6 solar mass. So these are, you can think of this as sort of stellar populations. Once the stellar particles are born, and assuming the normal IMF, we can predict at what rate the supernovas are exploding. So we can calculate how much energy these supernovae are putting back into the environment. We can also calculate how much metals the type 1A and type 2 supernova are putting back in to the environment. So by doing this, we actually, this is a snapshot of one of our simulations that actually shows distribution of dark matter, stars, gas, filaments along this direction. And also it follows the metals. This is the metal distributions in the cluster. That's actually important as this actually affects the cooling rate, which depends on the local metallicity. So all of these simulations, starting from cosmological initial condition, the cooling rates and star formation are solved self-consistently in these simulations. But I should mention that there are many physical processes that are particularly relevant for cooling for core, the cluster core region, that are not included in this simulation that I will present today, some of which are work in progress, including aging feedback, thermal conduction, cosmic ray magnetic field, and physical viscosity. These are the recipe that has not yet been included in the simulation I'll present today. And one of the key here is the use of the adaptive mesh refinement allows us to really achieve high resolution. That's actually important because we're interested in the effects of galaxy formation have on global properties of cluster. You need high resolution to really resolve the, at some level, the galaxy formation physics and its structure inside of it and what it does to the global properties of clusters. So, so these high resolution is actually extremely important for this. And we've actually simulated a sample of 16 cluster in Lambda CDM. We actually start from the same initial condition. We simulated a sample of actually two sets of run, one with a cooling and star formation, meaning that includes all of these processes. And then the second set of run, we actually turn off cooling and star formation. So actually, the physics of galaxy formation. By comparing these two sets of simulation, the idea is to try to assess what the galaxy formation physics or this cooling star formation physics have on the global properties of clusters. And I'll show you some of the comparison with the recent Chandra observations of nearby Relux cluster obtained by Alexei Biklinin. Now, before we actually do the comparison, I should mention that we also generated, we did the mock Chandra analysis of the simulated clusters and use what observers are using to actually derive the physical property that's from the Chandra X-ray observations. And one of the things that we found, this is important because we need to understand the biases in the key, in deriving key cluster parameters. And what we found here is the gas mass is very accurate. Essentially, with the X-ray surface brightness, you're measuring the gas mass that's emitting the X-ray. So that can be measured very accurately with the current Chandra observations. The temperatures are also accurate. We didn't see any biases. We calculated basically the extractor spectrum, fit the plasma model, actually calculate spectroscopic temperature as observers are actually doing. Throughout this talk, I'm going to use that spectroscopic temperature throughout in the scaling relation work that I will present shortly. But we also found that the hydrostatic mass estimate, the total mass estimate, assuming the gas in hydrostatic equilibrium with the potential, it's actually biased low by about 10%. As I'll show, we think, yes?
Sorry, I'm just curious. What makes the point like you mentioned in the simulating
mass? A point like this?
Yeah.
These are actually like massive galaxies and halos around the massive galaxies.
Oh, so it's actually shock gaps in.
These are not.
Well, they're really dense gas that's okay. Like bright in X-ray. So yeah, we actually have many of these are galaxies, and as you see there's you can even see the ground pressure stripped gas around that's coming out from the galaxy size halo as it enters into the cluster. So
did you make any cuts here, or was it pure simulation that you sort of projected?
This is just a pure simulation projected along the line of sight, and this is the X-ray surface brightness map. From the actually Chandra photon map.
Chandra photon map. So basically, you do probably also have a little bit of really cool stuff there that sort of that just doesn't fit in the X-rays.
Yes, we do have some of that too. Yes.
Do real Chandra observations have the galaxies that bright?
Not really, actually. This is almost a little bit abnormally too bright, and also as well as the central galaxies. It's related to overcooling at the density being a little bit too high compared to actual galaxy density. Yes. But when the observer actually analyzes this, they actually draw out there, they find all these substructures, Alexei Biklinin has some detection algorithm which actually finds all these small scale structures as well as some of the large scale bulk structure, which then mask it and then remove it from the analysis, because one of the things you like to do is to try to get the sort of smooth part to and not too confused by the substructure.
Well, real so, one so have AGNs as well. Right?
And real one actually has the AGN as well, so that would be, that's right. And so here is the comparison. So to start with, I want to show how the thermodynamic properties of galaxy clusters, the cluster gas profile as a function of radius normalized to R500 for two different sets of runs, one with and without cooling and star formation. The red one has no cooling and star formation. The blue one has cooling and star formation. What you can see here is that the removal cooling and star formation basically removes gas, turns that hot gas into stars. That actually causes suppression in gas densities. Actually, removal of gas in the central region causes the high entropy gas from outside to come in.
compression of that high entropy gas actually raises temperature. So it's interesting that the removal of the cooling and star formation in the central region actually elevates and actually heats the cluster in the outskirts, and by about 10%. Pressure profile is also interesting. Well, the cooling star formation do affect the normalization of pressure profile. And this scatter here is actually a 1 sigma scatter around the sample that I have chosen. And one of the things you notice is the pressure has a very self-similar profile. The cluster of different masses shows a very similar temperature profile as opposed to entropy, which is very different. It shows a very large scatter depending on, and there's a mass dependence. Smaller system tends to have a higher level of entropy compared to a large mass system. So the pressure profile is ideal for doing cosmology because of the cell similarity.
So what is the dashed line and what is the dotted line?
And also this thin blue dashed line, dotted line. The dotted line is actually the low temperature below 3 keV. So that's over here. So low temperature system has a slightly higher entropy core in the inner regions. And the dashed line is actually the system above 3 keV. This thick line is average over the entire sample, including low and mass of stuff.
So in the pressure, they are on top of each other, like part of them.
Oh, and here, it's actually, there are two lines you can't see, basically. So the point here is that the 3 keV cluster of groups and large cluster, they seem to exhibit. The basically seem to have a very similar shape in pressure, but not in all other quantities.
So what fraction of the gas cools out?
So in this simulation, actually, you can probably see here, it's actually rather large amount. It's at the level of about 30% of the gas actually cooling in this particular simulation.
Yeah, so
integrated over, I mean, it's
well, so here, this is a differential plot, and if you just sort of draw a line between, well, there are a lot more mass in the outskirts, of course. So here, the gas density is suppressed by about 20-25%, and that's where most of the mass is, so it's about 25-30% of the gas has turned into forming stars in the simulations.
So what do those labels mean? So T500 and K500, you can move on.
T500.
So it doesn't mean the temperature at
R500. Oh, sorry. So this is actually just the normalization parameter. Basically what I'm doing here is to take the clusters of different masses, normalize to some units, which depends on the self-similar scaling relation, actually predict some dependence on K, how the K, this is the expected level of entropy at the R500 for the self-similar model, with the gas fraction that's equal to baryon fraction unit.
So it's something like that black dash line or something.
Right. The only reason why I'm doing this is actually sort of to study, to basically make all the clusters with massive low mass cluster into the same one figure, just a normalization constant. I'm scaling out the next year. And here is the comparisons of how the results of our simulation compare with the recent Chandra observations. And magenta is the Chandra observation, the cluster, observed cluster about 5 keV. The green is the observed cluster below 2.5 keV, and then the cyan that you can see is somewhere between 2.5 and 5 keV. The point here is that the observations, the simulation that includes cooling and star formation seems to do pretty well in reproducing the Chandra observation gas density profile. If you look at the entropy profile, you can also see that the clusters also exhibit a similar entropy profile outside of about 20% of R500, 10% of your radius. So the agreement is very good in the outskirts and in terms of normalization as well as slope. But the inner region is not very well reproduced with the current simulations. You can see the same thing in temperature profile. This is temperature profile as a function of radius. Our simulation shows a declining temperature profile all the way out from the central regions. Agreement is good again beyond about 20%, but then in the inner region, the observations show much more isothermal-like temperature profile. Our simulation don't do very well at all in these regions. And same is true for the pressure as well. And this is just another way of stating the same things, but this is showing the entropy level measured at two different radius. This is the inner regions of clusters, the 10% of R200,
This is our R500. These are simulations with cooling and star formation and how that compares with simulations that don't include these pre-physical processes, because you can see that the cooling and star formation elevate the entropy level in the inner regions, but also you see that similar elevation, significant elevation in the outskirts. And you can here is a comparison of the entropy plot as a function of extra temperature compared with the recent Chandra observation in the outskirts, and also added the XMM and ROSAT ASCA data in the inner regions. The point here is that in outskirts, the entropy level, there's very good agreement between the current simulation with cooling and star formation and Chandra observations in terms of entropy level and its scaling relation as a function of temperature, dead on, both in terms of slope, in terms, and also in terms of normalization. So the simulation seems to be doing pretty well, good job in reproducing thermodynamical properties in the outskirts of galaxy cluster, and that, but that's not true if you go into the inner region. That's the 10% of the virial radius of clusters. Our observation seems to show the much flatter entropy as a function of temperature, and our simulation is just shows much steeper, just again showing that the simulation is not doing a very good job in reproducing inner regions at the moment. And of course, as many people have talked today, that I think the effect of energy feedback from active galactic nuclei might be playing some role in regulating and determining thermodynamic properties of cluster cores. And so that may be something that might need to be included to actually explain the observed offset. For cosmology, what we care about is the calibration of mass and observables. This is a relation, mass-temperature relation, is the relation that's been used widely in the past in the X-ray cosmology analysis. Here is the recent update from our comparison of our simulation with the recent Chandra observation. There's a good agreement between simulation and observation at the level of about 10%. There's a slight offset between simulation and observation at the moment. Here for the simulation points, the scattering simulation points are about the 20%. We're actually seeing 20% scatter. Most of the scatter is actually driven by what we call unrelaxed system, and not surprisingly. If you actually look, the mean of this unrelaxed open circle, unrelaxed system, is actually offset by about 10%. Unrelaxed cluster tends to be about cooler than the relaxed cluster by about 10%, and that actually caused the normalization shift in mass-temperature relation. And we think the reason is that in the unrelaxed cluster, there is still a lot of energy in the dynamical motion, which hasn't thermalized into heating of the gas. So the average X-ray temperature sort of comes out lower in the cluster that actually has undergoing mergers. So that's the general trend that we find. Again, I should mention that this X-ray temperature here is the X-ray spectroscopic temperature that's coming out from Mach-Chandra analysis, but excluding the cluster core where our simulations don't do well. And also at the same time, the observation shows the significant variation from cluster to cluster in the inner region. So I'm using the region that's seems much more self-similar and cleaner in order to do the reliable comparison between theory and observations.
Sorry, I missed that. Can you say again how you define relaxed and unrelaxed from the observations, not from
the body? Here, these observations are actually from all relaxed clusters. I'm only showing the unrelaxed systems for simulated systems.
Sorry,
I probably didn't say that clearly.
Oh, wait a minute. So the X-ray sample has been selected so that everything that looked unrelaxed is thrown out.
That's correct.
And the morphological statement of thou shalt be unrelaxed is what? How do they decide?
That was based on our simulation and our criteria of what morphologically looks relaxed, unrelaxed, as shown in the preview. And basically, that's looking at the amount of substructure, X-ray substructure we see. If we see any strong, significant X-ray discontinuities, we take that as an indication of the disturbed morphology. So in the previous, based on the selection, this is how X-ray relaxed cluster was selected by looking at these images like this. When I say relaxed cluster, The cluster tends to show the elliptical morphology or isopodal or spherical or elliptical morphology with little substructure. And when we call Hongelak system, that tends to show large fraction of large substructure as well as very disturbed morphology. These are actually shocks that's actually being generated.
But this is your SIM, right?
This is our SIM.
Yeah, I'm asking more how the X-ray observers decide and what their definition is and how robust that is.
It's not at all robust at this point. So basically, the way we are calling this is actually just exactly following what basically I generate this plot, send it to the X-ray observer, who's with eyes try to identify features like the density, discontinuity, substructure.
So we have a human factor.
It's a totally human factor at this point. In principle, these are quantifiable. You can calculate, like people calculate power ratio, ellipticity ratios, amount of substructure. These are all quantifiable, though none of them.
What fraction of clusters do they tend to throw out to make a relaxed cluster sample?
I actually don't have that number top of my head, so I should probably say that.
Have you looked at the temperature distribution? Not just profile, but the distribution of relaxed clusters, because X-ray surface brightness may not be a good indication of whether it's relaxed or not relaxed. If you look at the temperature distribution, that's more immediate. And sometimes you do have perfectly regular X-ray surface brightness map, but if you look at temperature, it's a mess.
I'm not sure what fraction of that is actually true, but usually the temperature map is a lot more expensive to actually make because you actually need to do a spectral fitting of each region, so you get much coarser pixels.
That's right, but I'm just curious.
Right.
If you look at a temperature distribution of your simulations, right, or what you call relaxed clusters,
right.
Are they actually relaxed?
They seem relaxed. No cluster we actually find is truly relaxed because there is always a small galaxy forming and causing temperature discontinuity shocks. Cold fronts and shock fronts has been found even in what we call relaxed clusters. So it's none of the clusters that we actually find is really truly relaxed in perfect sense. Right? And let's see, so that's the mass temperature relation. And we also looked at.
Can I ask you one more question about that?
Yes.
This offset between relaxed and unrelaxed systems, and I'm wondering, is that just how much of that is just the fact that that the spectroscopic temperature doesn't correspond exactly to their emission or mass rate of temperature? I mean, in fact, if you're mixing phases here, then you're essentially reobserving these, and there is a systematic bias when you do that. Right?
Absolutely. What we are doing here is that because X-ray observers are using spectroscopic temperature, we actually analyze and using exact same analysis tools.
Yes.
And to actually get the X-ray spectroscopic temperature for the simulated clusters.
Sure. Well.
So these are the same apple-on-apple, same temperature.
Sure.
Now, I can comment that X-ray spectroscopic temperature is about 10% larger than mass-weighted temperature. If you try to calculate in a simple way, mass-weighted temperature within this radio range, yeah. It's about 10% higher. So there is a 10% bias expected. If I were to plot mass-weighted temperature for simulated cluster, they tend to have a 10% lower temperature than the X-ray temperature, because X-rays are more sensitive to the inner regions,
right.
And the temperature is lower in the outskirts. So mass-weighted temperature.
I guess I just asked about your explanation where you said that there's this dynamic energy that's being transferred into the gas. And is that really your explanation, or is it just?
When we actually look at the mass-weighted temperature, we see similar kind of offset at the level of about 10%. So I think that even if we don't use the spectral temperature, but use more physical mass weighted temperature, we do see similar offset about the same level. And so on. So the problem with this problem is that the scatter is very large, 20%. That's important for cosmology. Also, the two different populations of cluster, relax or unrelax, is in very well little defined way. They seem to show the normalization offset at the level of 10%. So depending on which cluster you're analyzing, you should be using different kind of relation. Again, these morphological measures are very difficult and sort of rather ill-defined. So you know, having to use a different normalization for different kind of cluster would be a problematic. So what we've been doing is trying to look for an observable that actually shows much stronger correlation. And what we found is that this, if you plot the extra, what we call extra pressure, the gas mass times the temperature, both of which can be obtained from the X-ray data, you multiply those two and plot the functional mass, that actually seems to show a much tighter relation. I think the most impressive thing is that the scatter in this relation is about 8%. If you can actually, so from this observable quantity or obtainable the quantity that's obtainable from X-ray survey, you measure this and you can actually infer that the total cluster mass at the level of 8% for any systems.
Yeah, this scatter is this based on actually projecting a single cluster from all three orthogonal directions and then plugging this in. So basically, it is a lot statistically independent. So if you call this scatter 8%, do you sort of correct for this?
I could actually do the same analysis just using one of the projections for 16 clusters, get about the same 8% answer systematic as a scatter. So that won't change the conclusion. And but you're right that there are actually three points here, which actually is viewed along the three orthogonal projections, which happens to lie just well within the scatter. This is actually a very emerging cluster. Actually, one of the clusters that I showed has a very disturbing morphology. This relation is very insensitive to that. This relation shows both relaxed and unrelaxed cluster shows that we have not yet detected any statistical significant changes in normalization between these two systems. So this scaling relation should be applicable for any clusters that you're going to find. Also, that the redshift, these points include redshift of 0 and 0.6, just following the standard cell similar evolution model. They all lie in about 8%.
So the vertical axis here is the true mass. And
that's correct.
The horizontal is measured, everything is measured from X-ray, right?
This is correct.
Yeah, and gas is measured from gas profile. But how do you measure your
M-gas?
M-gas. Yeah,
it's measured. Integrating the gas density derived from the X-ray surface brightness out to R500. Not fitting a beta model. It's actually one that it's using the model that's developed by Alexei Degweny, which actually shows that the gas density actually steepens faster than the beta model would predict. So it's using that model, and these gas density is constrained out to R500 with the measurements, not extrapolating models.
So it's what part of M versus gas, would it then be biased high for the unrelaxed clusters? Would gas be biased high for the unrelaxed clusters? And is that why you're saying the two cancel each other out?
That's correct. Yes, so we do indeed, if you plot mass versus gas mass only, we do find larger scatter. We did find larger scatter if you only plot mass times the gas temperature. So we did find some anti-correlation between the gas mass and temperature, which actually cancels their effect and actually shows the tightest relation. So that's what we found.
And so if you use the beta model, then you can get a systematic shift. Does the scatter change?
If you use beta model, you certainly do get systematic shift. I think the tendency is to actually, these are actually simulated clusters, so I'm not fitting any, I'm fitting the beta model. Beta model. What that will do is that tends to actually show, if you assume beta of 2/3, what has been often used in X-ray analysis, that gives you the very shallow density profile. Measurement actually shows steeper. So what that means is if you take a gradient, this actually shows a smaller gradient, and therefore smaller hydrostatic mass. So that's going to cause a bias in the hydrostatic mass estimate.
Is it a few percent, or is it?
It's actually as big as 20%.
The scatter is still the same?
Scatter is, we haven't actually looked at the scatter when we actually did that analysis, but.
It's probably a bigger disaster than that, right? Because that gas profile has two components. You know, it's not the core for this fit, but a single beta model will just give you some core density profile that would be completely inappropriate for extrapolation to RFID.
Oh, so if you have a core, one of the things that people do is to try to introduce additional beta models. So you cannot fit the two core clusters of a single beta model.
But Alexi's model has two components.
That's true. That's true. Okay.
It has many more than two components.
Well, there are many more. Well, there are at least the central brightness and then also steepening the outskirts.
Are you having central brightness?
No.
This is using all of this.
And here is the comparison of that scaling relation to the relaxed clusters I just chose here. So what we found is that the slope agreement between the slope is very good between this simulated YX mass relation and then observations. Again, here again, we actually find 10% underestimate of clusters. So the observed cluster seems to show about 10% lower mass for given YX. We think that it's due to some random gas motions in galaxy clusters. And in hierarchical structure formation model, accretion and mergers are the mode how the clusters grow. And it creates shocks and turbulence and gas motions. Its actually motions are rather chaotic. It's not just a completely random gas motion. But these motions, if they are present, they can provide some dynamical support for the gas infall. And this is a snapshot of entropy map. It shows the structure formation shock, the filamentary shock at the early time. These are virial shock, very aspherical virial shock filament. There's a lot of mass accretion along the filament, which causes these kind of turbulent, bulk-like motions, very chaotic gas motions in the central regions of clusters. And so these motions can potentially provide non-bubble pressure support. And in our recent paper, we tried to quantify the non-thermal pressure support and how that and its property in seeing numerical simulations. Here is the turbulence, which is defined the gas density and sort of velocity dispersions of the random gas motions to get the sense of how much gas motion there is. Compare that to the thermal pressure. And the two different curves showing the relaxed and unrelaxed systems. Unrelaxed system is in actually dotted dashed line. What we are finding here is that we seem to find a very low level of turbulence in the inner regions, minded that there is no Asian feedback in the central region, which can introduce significant motions in the central region as well. Now, so that there's about a few percent motions, but the turbulence or the gas motion contribution increases toward the outskirts. So at the R500, where we are doing the measurements, the top turbulent contribution could be as much as 10% even for relaxed cluster, and it's even higher for the unrelaxed system. And now that continues to increase in the outskirts at 2 times R500. It's probably closer to what people might call virial radius. This gas motion can contribute as much as 20-30%, depending on the state of the cluster.
Interrupt, but can I ask my question again? Exactly how are you measuring P-turb in a simulation?
Right. The way we are defining is to actually calculate the velocity dispersion, mass-weighted velocity dispersion of a pixel in the simulations. That's resolved down to about 2 kiloparsec scale. So that's a velocity dispersion, mass-weighted velocity dispersion of the pixel. Now we actually also looked at we can also calculate the power spectrum of the turbulence.
Let me tell you what I'm getting at.
Yes.
See if you've actually looked at this at all,
yes.
Because we've been discussing if this is the right thing to do, we think. What you have to do is to have some kind of smoothing so that you're looking at the sort of effect of heat in the turbulent motions, but also you have to take into account that some of the larger scale swirlings of the gas should not really be thought of in a turbulent way because they actually are, they're non-equilibrium.
That's correct.
So have you looked at that? Are those things taken into account? Because what that means, of course, is that M-tote model would be broken by another term, which is a dynamical term.
That's absolutely correct. This shouldn't really, it says turbulent, I think it's my business number, I think the turbulence This is the sort of the bulk motion of the velocity bulk motion of the bulk motion.
So
that's what's quantified here.
So it's essentially an out of equilibrium entity
that
is being computed.
That is right.
And saying the level at which dp third by dr is not equal to gm over r squared.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
And then it's what's the function of that? I mean, why relaxed and unrelaxed is the same, right? At least on radii.
It's similar, and actually, I think the unrelaxed system tends to show larger level of motions, but there are a lot of scattering unrelaxed systems. It's similar. It increases toward the outskirts where the mass accretion is actually happening. This is how cluster grows, by accreting a lot of mass in the outskirts. Here is the mass profile. So what we did here is to so this is a true the mass profile. I normalize at R500. So this is a true mass profile. It's one at the R500. We also calculated the mass assuming the hydrostatic equilibrium, which actually shows that the hydrostatic equilibrium is biased low at all radius. Bias increases in the outskirts of galaxy clusters. For the relaxed system at R500, it's about 10% bias in the hydrostatic mass estimate. If we include this bulk motion component, try to correct for this formula, that sort of recovers actually almost excellently, but it actually can correct. So if we could actually measure the additional non-thermal pressure component, one can, in principle, actually can recover the true mass. And here's another example. If we actually plot the hydrostatic mass instead of true mass for the simulated clusters, as it's done for the observed clusters, the agreement improves further between the y, x, and mass relations. Basically, the normalization is consistent as well as the slope. And I'm not here to talk about these results, but this recent results of the Quinning have actually used this YX mass relation to calculate, to measure the evolution of the cluster gas mass function to get cosmology. So this is actually now, I just want to indicate that this now is used in practice to actually get the Pilot's constraints of dark energy equation in the state.
For the constraints, did they just assume the X and scatter that you were finding in the simulation?
Basically, accounted for the 10% as well as the 10% systematic bias. It's not at the moment. This constraint is not limited by the systematic uncertainty of 10% normalization, though we will soon be.
And what priors were on there?
Okay, so that's actually the prior on HST priors and others. I'm not here to actually talk about this result, let me not go into it.
Yeah.
It's a talk on its own, and it should be given by Lex City Clinic. But for the future, that was based on less of order 90 clusters, or 87 clusters. Remember correctly. The future of the SZ survey are underway, and that will hopefully will detect larger number of clusters. It's going to improve the statistical power of this cluster counting technique. SZ is excellent because it's a great way of finding cluster at high redshift. It's redshift independent. It's also great because the SZ directly measures the integrated X-ray pressure intrinsically. So these are the two potentially attractive features of the SZ effect. Here's the comparisons of the SZ flux as a function of gas mass from the Chandra observations for a sample of 38 clusters. These are the simulation that I was talking about, the cooling and star formation seems to reproduce these scaling relation obtained by Oberon Bima SZ Chandra data reasonably well, both in terms of sort of slope as well as normalization. Detail of this still being worked out, and I think there will be Dan Maron will talk about the results from SZA. There are a lot of work to do here. First, this is a calibration of R2500, half of the R500. One would like to go into the outskirts where the cluster physics is much less
important. Also, that there would be nice to get more observational observed data points in the low mass systems. So these are the two improvements that can be made. The theory is actually predicting that it will go to 10 to the 12th. So it'd be good to see data points extending all the way down.
But the Milky Way.
Next,
right?
About the gas.
That's only factor of 5.
Right. And of course, the agreement is very encouraging, but for the future, of course, we like to improve the normalization of the mass observable mass relation to better than 10%. So right now it's a 10%. We'd like to improve that better than 10% for the future surveys once we find hundreds and thousands of clusters, hopefully in the near future. Now, when you do that, there are other physical processes that might become important. Things like the cosmic ray, which can also potentially provide non-thermal pressure component in addition to turbulence or bulk motions that provide non-thermal components. Fermi, the future Fermi results will be, Fermi would probably provide some insights into this component. Interaction of the high-energy cosmic ray with the noble protons, abundant noble protons in cluster would produce pi zero, which would be 10^2 photons, producing the abundant, lots of gamma ray emissions. This is a prediction, this is a simple toy model for the pi zero decay as a function of energy, and for three different spectral slope for the proton populations. For the pressure, non-thermal pressure contribution of 10% in the case of coma. So here's the glass expected glass detection threshold. I think if there is 10% cosmic ray pressure, we think we will see it, at least in the most nearby rich clusters. For slightly smaller, farther, the more distant clusters, you probably need to stack these signals, pixels in Fermi, and try to get the sort of upper limit. If you don't see it, that's actually a very stringent constraint on cosmic ray pressure component that goes into this type of hydrostatic mass estimate. If we don't see cosmic ray signature, it basically puts put the upper limit of about 1% on this term. Now, at the few percent level, there are other plasma physics that might become important. And one of the physics that we explored in our recent paper was the sedimentation of X-ray, of helium in clusters made out of hydrogen and helium under the influence of gravity. The heavier nuclei tends to settle into the gravitational potential, which actually changed the hydrogen to helium mass ratio as a function of radius, as a function of time as well. This is a very slow process, but this is important because the amount of X-ray that you observe is produced both by electron scattering off of hydrogen as well as helium. So that when you actually calculate the hydrostatic mass, or if you write down the hydrostatic equilibrium equation, there is P, which depends on density, number density KP. You pick up this new term, that's the mean molecular weight, which depends on the composition of hydrogen and helium. So that can actually introduce biases. And the place where that might be interesting for SZ is the Hubble quantum parameter estimate. The X-ray surface brightness do depend on this parameter, the helium abundance, where SZ is not sensitive to that. So that when you calculate the angular diameter distance to the cluster by combining X-ray and SZ measurements, your measurements do depend on the assumed helium abundance. We don't know anything about the helium abundance in cluster because they are fully ionized. We don't have any lines you can use to actually measure helium abundance of function radius. So we always assume, almost always assume, that this is a primordial helium abundance or slightly higher of that, polluted by stellar star formation. And that could actually potentially introduce about 5% bias in the angular diameter distance measurement. This point was made by Markovich in a recent paper. And it's kind of interesting because that the most recent, latest X-ray SZ derived Hubble parameters by Bonamente et al. Seems to show about the 77.6 plus minus 4.5. That's this measurement, X-ray SZ derived measurement. And that's slightly higher by about 5% compared to WMAP and Hubble key projects. So just to summarize, the current cosmological simulation with cooling and star formation do a reasonable job, a very good job in reproducing thermodynamic observed properties clustering the outskirts So all mass relations of simulated clusters now agree at the level of about 10% with observations. Now we actually found along the way that this robust, there is a very robust low scatter mass proxy, YX and YSZ, both of them are, show very tight scatter with the mass, and these quantities are available for both future X-ray and SZ surveys. Now there are still 10% discrepancy between theory and observation. We think that there are some non-thermal pressure component, could be some bulk motion or some level of turbulence. Maybe cosmic rain might contribute, but I think the future Fermi data will tell us how important that is. But also that the Bayesian plasma physics in clusters might also affect at the level of a few percent. Cluster cores are not relevant reducing simulations. Maybe things like the aging feedback might be a very, may be playing a very significant role in determining the thermodynamic properties of cluster core as well as the formation of massive galaxies. And I think the future is very bright. There are a lot of surveys coming up, and it's very exciting. At the same time, that people are making bigger and better simulations with more physics. So I think we have a lot to hope for in the future. Thank you.
Questions?
So you didn't mention the overcooling problem. Do you think that's a problem?
That's a significant problem in the cluster cores, especially. Most of the cooling problem is actually is the overproduction of stars in the central regions. That's where the thermodynamic property is completely off. That's also where the stellar fraction is also. That's where we find all the missing sort of stars that we don't really see. I think it's a significant problem.
Can I just follow up on that? So. Core cutout is a nice way to go, except that of course the core is determining what the other parts are doing as well. So have you been able to do any sort of exploration of when you change the conditions for what's happening in the core, do you see the response and how big of an effect is it in the outer regions where we hope to actually learn?
One of the things that we like to do as a simulator is to actually put the aging feedback into the simulation. It's a long-term project, unfortunately, but it's a project that we're doing. I think I would also like to see. I think that, but that's still beyond that jury is still out. We still don't have, we don't not yet have the results on that end. Though there's some analytical estimate would be very useful.
So you mentioned does it have spectroscopic capabilities? Do you need spectroscopic temperatures for your YX? Or will it just be
You received that, yes. It will on the spectroscopic capabilities, yes. And they have enough energy resolution to actually measure temperature. I think people are talking about I think the question is also, for the future X-ray mission, it would be also useful to have a really high energy resolution calorimeter, which would actually go and measure turbulence. So for X-ray, you can actually, once you can measure it, you can make that correction to actually get true mass. That might be on the future International X-ray Observatory and other on Astro H mission, which will be scheduled to be launched in 2013. That might provide that.
And Alexei's constraints on this module, what does he include for the error on the mass function due to barium? In Alexei's cosmological constraints, what error did he include on the mass function, the contribution from baryons?
Oh, the effect, you're asking the effect of baryons have on the prediction of mass function? Actually, I don't know off the top of my head. It's expected to be, well, probably not too significant, but well, I don't know.
Maybe 20%.
Is there any observable way that we can constrain the amount of non-thermal pressure support, or is it just that at some level we just have to compare like stacked lensing masses to X-ray masses and say, well, that's just a calibration?
Yes, so people have actually, there are at least several ways. One is if the clusters are turbulent, turbulent mediums tends to show the fluctuations in pressure. Mm-hmm. So people have tried to measure the pressure fluctuation using XM data for the coma cluster. This is a work by Peter Schuchert back many years ago.
They have measured for the coma cluster, they measure actually for the turbulence level to be about 10%. Basically, they're measuring the power spectrum of the pressure fluctuations, integrating on the curve will tell you how much energy they have, and you get about 10%. That's very indirect, but you know, it gives you some way of estimating what the turbulence pressure is. Again, also that you can use the Doppler broadening of the iron line. Heavy element usually tends to show a very small thermal dispersion. So, you know, if the motion is at the level of about 300 kilometers per second, you can detect the broadening of the iron line with the iron line to actually estimate, directly measure the turbulence. And that's one of the, I think, the main science goal for the Astro-H mission, Japan-US mission, that's scheduled in 2013. And the International Extra Observatory probably will have that capability.
So, and in the morning, when I mentioned the JACO program, we had done an analysis for a couple of clusters using weak lensing X-ray and whatnot, and in fact we got results very similar to the ones that Suki was talking about. So you know, it's you can't distinguish cosmic rays versus turbulence versus bulk motion, but you do see something extra in the outskirts, which makes sense.
Yeah. Oh. In the case, for example, that you would be using only a single distribution for the dark matter, it could be impossible to so well reproduce the variety of process, or could be obtained similar results.
I'm not quite sure. Suppose
that you would be in need of to use only one single form for the dark matter distribution, no? In this case, the results that you will be obtaining for matching the appearance for the cluster would be not so good necessarily, or could be similar in quality?
I'm not sure if I...
Well, I think the dark matter had different properties.
Sure.
Would your simulations be...
Oh, yes.
How similar to observations would they be? I mean, if
they're not... You consider like a fixed solid...
Sure.
Which you could matter, and could this approach with a single solid dome be well matched the appearance for...
I mean, certainly, if the dark matter has additional properties, it would modify, because the gas is sitting in the potential level of dark matter, and if we change the properties of dark matter, it would have direct impact on the gas property we are predicting. So the answer to that question is yes.
I think that's
yes, would be well matched or not?
It would disrupt. Presumably, it would disrupt the good relation that was contained in this case. Assuming collisionless dark matter, any deviations from would have some effect depending on the amount of effect that you can tolerate in terms of changing dark matter physics.
Do you have any hopes for constraining basic properties of dark matter with, say, X-ray clusters?
I think the most interesting one is actually looking at Bullock cluster and modeling the detail in Bullock cluster actually tells you something about, and probably potentially provide some constraints on collisional cross-section of dark matter. Now that depends on the orbital parameters and impulse state, initial condition. It requires a lot of simulation work to try to match that up and make sure you match all the observational feature, X-ray shocks and things. And you can potentially improve constraints on a cross section of dark matter.
Let's scream off. Great, thank you. Okay, for the last talk.
All right,
take it away.